You're listening to Recovery, Healing, Outreach, and Awareness, a podcast about domestic violence, sponsored by Randy's House of Angels. Domestic or intimate partner violence is a complex and silent epidemic that affects millions of people worldwide. To respond to the overwhelming issues associated with domestic violence, Randy's House of Angels has produced a series of podcasts that will bring this epidemic to the forefront of public consciousness and break the silence that often shrouds it. This is Paul Miller, producer of this program, and by creating a dedicated platform, Randy's House of Angels hopes to create a safe space for survivors, advocates, and experts to share their stories, insights, and knowledge. A series of topics will be discussed that can offer vital support and resources to victims and survivors, helping them realize that they are not alone and that there is help available. It can also serve as a catalyst for raising awareness and fostering necessary conversations within families, communities, and institutions to empower individuals, foster empathy, and inspire collective action toward eradicating domestic violence while creating a safer, more compassionate society. We invite you to access the podcast by going to randyshouseofangels.org. As we conclude Season 3 of the Randy's House of Angels podcast, today we take a look back at our guests from this season. Nancy Chavez, Sherry Peters, Dr. Ellen Smith, and Paul Miller recap the most important and influential guests we've had in Season 3. And I'm so honored to be joined here today by the wonderful folks who are part of this podcast. Of course, to my left, Nancy Chavez. Nancy, thank you so much for doing everything that you do in regards with this podcast. But I'm really looking forward to hearing your insight about the episodes that we've recorded.
Thank you for inviting me to be part of this also.
Well, of course, who else would be here? We got to have somebody in to be on the podcast, though, of course. All right. Also, Dr. Ellen Smith. Dr. Smith, and you've done such a wonderful job in as far as doing these interviews. And I always continue to be impressed by your growth as a podcaster. So I just really appreciate everything that you're doing as well.
I never thought I would get that word, growth as a podcaster. That's fantastic. And thank you for your help, all of you.
But do you remember the first one? And I'm not being critical because, hey, we all have to start somewhere.
I was sweating bullets.
But you come in now, both you and Sherry. I mean, you come in now and you own it. Like, instead of being more inquisitive and trying to get some information from me or from others, you sit down and you run the show. And that's one of the biggest things that I appreciate about you, Dr. Smith, is that
you
have, from year to year, have continued to evolve and taking ownership over being the host of one of the hosts of the show. So I wanted to thank you for that as well.
I've always wanted to be a grown-up podcaster. I think I've come to there.
Well, of course. Yes, absolutely. And Sherry Peters as well. Sherry, it's always been a pleasure to get to work with you too. And the growth that I think the show has made through these last couple of years has been evident, most certainly by your hosting efforts as well.
Thank you. I felt like Ellen the first time. It was really scary not knowing what I was supposed to be doing. So it's kind of nice now to feel like I'm pretty confident when I come in. And so thank you, Paul.
Of course. Well, what we wanted to do today is we wanted to go over sort of a quick recap of all four of the episodes that we've recorded. But before we get into that, I want to kick it over to Nancy to kind of get us started on this recap podcast and share with us some of her general insights before we, start going episode by episode.
Thanks, Paul. You know, I had to think when I was walking our last guest back, like how much I've grown personally. Victimization does impact our community, and it has impacted me personally, but I feel so naive. But yet on the other side, I feel so good about growing in my knowledge of being a true advocate, as I say I am, for domestic violence. We have been so honored to have individuals here that have so much professionalism, so much knowledge and experience, willing to share, but also to expand our listeners out there, their knowledge of domestic violence and really being able to apply it. So that's why I'm so grateful that we're doing these podcasts, because I think anyone that listens to this will learn at least one thing, one single thing, because I know I have learned so much, and sometimes I feel like I'm overwhelmed with it, but I'm just so thankful to be able to grow every day of my life and to have all of you here today, too, and to be part of this.
And taking from what you said, this has changed our minds, but it's also, for me, changed my heart. I see that ending domestic violence is possible, and it's one person and one situation at a time, and so I appreciate that as well.
And I also think that when I look back on all three seasons that we've done, we've had such a diverse group of folks who have come in, from victims to survivors to professionals. We've got juvenile justice and mental health and the law enforcement folks. It's just been incredible to think about all the different topics we've covered and to think that, wow, there's so much more that we still have to explore in spite of the fact that we've gotten so much already.
I think part of all of it is the fact that we continue, to your point, to have so many different aspects of domestic violence all across the board. I mean, even just this season, from law enforcement to popular culture and even mental health that comes along with that, it's showing that this is such a wide sort of swath of people that this impacts, and that there's a lot of other aspects that come along with it that maybe the average person doesn't think about. Maybe they think about just, you know, personal disagreements leading to potential intimate partner violence. But now we're starting to see that I think we're really starting to get to the point where we're seeing a much more holistic picture of the people who are impacted by intimate partner violence. So I think that that's really, really special that we made that point. And again, just a tribute to the people behind the scenes who are booking. I said initially Nancy, but she obviously wanted to give a shout out to
everyone here at the table. I mean, just Dr. Ricketts, that just came up with these great topics that we could possibly discuss, and also the resources that she has allowed us to be introduced to. So I just wanted to do that for her sake. It's wonderful.
Very good. Well, what we're going to do today is we are going to have just a really sort of quick rapid fire through each of the four episodes of our season. This is the third year in a row that we've done this wrap-up podcast, but it's also one that has sort of allowed us the opportunity to reflect. As if you've ever talked to Nancy or really any of us, these are episodes that we record over several months. These are not, hey, we're just going to get in and record them all at once. So because of that, we have the opportunity to reflect on some of these episodes. So I want to, I'm going to go through, talk about who the guest was, and if each of you could offer some takeaways or some reflection for those individual episodes, I think that would be really cool. Well, we're going to go way back to episode number one, which was examining the role of law enforcement in domestic violence situations. We were joined by Detective Danelle Owen, and she was working with the East Pennsboro Police Department as a detective, one that might be the most fresh in our minds because we just recorded it, but one that in terms of the way things were released, back in August. So I want to go around, first start with Nancy. Nancy, what were some of the things that Detective Owen shared with us that really resonated with you?
Detective Owen also talked about children, and that's why I appreciate all of our speakers talking about the impact of children, but more so of how she really talked about shielding children from the impact of the crime that occurs in the home, whether it's domestic violence or other type of crime. And I thought that really was very sensitive to me, because when there's something happening in your home, not only do you feel that there's an invasion of privacy, like this is your home, but children are traumatized. They don't know which way to turn. All they know is like they were trying to protect their mom, their dad, and their siblings. And the fact that, you know, when she comes into a scene, she's looking at how to shield these children from the impact. And that meant a lot to me, because what we do at Randy's House of Angels is bring children to our programs, that making sure that they don't perpetuate the behavior that they learn in their homes. And so that really struck me as being very sensitive and just touched home with me.
For me, what was really the take home with Detective Owen was the humanity of the police officers and detectives. We all think that these folks, particularly those in uniform, are something different. And they're human, and they, when they go into a scene and they've just had six consecutive really, really hard and awful situations, then they've got to go into that seventh one and reset. And all of us, resetting is hard. And the other thing is that really impacted me was that they are making great strides in terms of doing a better job on things that they want to do a better job on, because they want to get rid of domestic violence just like every person on this podcast has and does. You know, we can't always get it perfectly right, but we can always get it better. And I was just very excited to hear that they're working on that. Not surprised, but excited.
I was definitely impressed with Detective Owen talking about how trauma-informed care has become just a part of what they do. I loved her example of how they've moved from how they used to do things, even the interviews with the folks, and how they do them now. The idea that they don't stand when they're talking with a child. They get down to the child's level, which is a really important thing to do. The idea that they have learned, and she's part of the teaching and the training of this trauma-informed care process, I think it was great.
One of the things that I really appreciated from this, just trying to find something unique, let's just say that, is the amount of professional development that she discussed. Basically, on almost every single question that had been asked, she had been referring to either recent or past professional development that they've engaged with. Certainly somebody being in education, professional development's one of the most important part of our jobs, because we all hopefully acknowledge that while we hope that we are doing great work and continue to evolve as employees, and in my case, you know, an educator, I also know that I'm far from a finished product, you know, that there's always professional development that can be going on, and it's something that I take very seriously in my job. But it is interesting to find some of the areas that she discussed about how professional development operated, both on the air and even after we got off the air and we continued. So applause and kudos go out to Detective Owen that, and again, shared with us, again, one of the more unique takes on this particular situation. I want to move on to the second episode, Breaking the Silence, Addressing Mental Health Stigma in Domestic Violence Situations, with Tony Shear. This was one of the memorable in a variety of reasons as well, but maybe for some different reasons than the episode with Detective Owen. So I'm going to kick it over to Nancy to talk about some of her reflections from this particular episode.
The silence is what Tony Shear talked about that really, I could relate to that, based upon not only me being a victim and not talking about me being a victim for many years, but the silence of my daughter, Randy, and what she experienced in our home. And she said, the unspoken rule of silence is the most dangerous. So children learn not to be violent. You know, we know that law enforcement is there in our community to protect us. We want to have a safe community. But on the other hand, they also learn from the violence. And the violence in their home is what they're observing, and they perpetuate that. So then it goes back to that unspoken rule that a lot of families have in their home. What goes on in this home, in this house, stays here. And we don't talk about it, especially when it comes to domestic violence.
I was really fascinated and interested in hearing that those folks who are violent can learn how not to be violent, can get care. And I think many people have the sense that once a violent person, always a violent person. Tony Shear did not say it was easy, But there are so many things in the world that one can make changes in our lives in many ways, in our relationships. And she gave me hope that I didn't really recognize before.
And I think as I look back on the interview, I was impressed with a whole lot of what Toni was saying. Her conversation around stigma and mental health, I think, was an important one. We still know that there's a long way to go to address the stigma that exists in getting treatment, mental health treatment. And I was also, as Ellen said, impressed with the idea that those who have been violent can change. She talked about having worked with folks who have been committing violence against others. Yeah.
One of the things that I took away from this, and something I still honestly think about, and this is something that I actually deal with quite a lot in my job, is I, for one, in my life, have taken advantage of mental health services. I am an advocate for those services, and working with students as well is something that I continue to advocate for on behalf of those folks, because the stigma is still there. And I hate to say that. I wish it wasn't true. And I do think that we're making some significant changes to that, that it's becoming less and less stigmatized. But what you continue to see is, even from a student perspective, is the stigma has always been if you go to get help, there's something wrong with you, as opposed to the fact that it really should be quite the opposite, that if you're going to get help, you should be celebrated and applauded. And that was something that maybe indirectly that Toni talked about and that resonated with me when I left, because it's something that every single time I have a new interaction with students, I talk about the not only the mental health services that we offer as a school, but also how there's a, you know, sort of indirect ways, either finding a friend to speak with can also be sort of that first step to maybe seeking some additional professional help as well. So that was something that, even though I hate the fact that, especially for males, I don't want to just, you know, give a blanket statement, but as the male here, it is most certainly still a stigma in the male community about finding and seeking mental health support and assistance. So the one thing that, when I look back to Toni, was that she was talking about some of the gains that have been made, and that makes me feel happy that's happening. I wish the gains would be coming a little bit more quickly, but I suppose anything like that is going to take some time.
Paul, if I just mentioned when you said that, it takes courage.
Absolutely.
And she said that it takes courage to take that step.
And sometimes it's really just that first step, because once you experience mental health counseling or other, you know, ways of dealing with mental health issues, I think that's, you know, if people could just go one time and kind of see what it's like and see that it's probably not quite what they've built up in their mind, I think that could make a big difference. And hopefully we're starting to see that. According to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, it takes a victim 8 times before she leaves her abuser. Also, did you know that 1 in 15 children are exposed to intimate partner violence each year, and 90% of these children are eyewitnesses to this violence? Are you looking for ways to support these individuals? You can always go to randyshouseofangels.org/ways-to-give. There are many ways you can help support Randy's House of Angels and our efforts to establish, provide, and support therapeutic programs to children who experience domestic violence. We appreciate your support of the community through Randy's House of Angels. All right, well, one that was very close to my heart was Dr. Misty Knight with The Influence of Popular Culture on Domestic Violence, Harmful Tropes, and Changing Narratives, as a person who teaches communications and has done a fair amount of research in popular culture. I've actually presented for the last 5 years at the Popular Culture Association National Conference. So I've done quite a bit of study on popular culture, which is why I loved this one. Maybe my personal favorite. I don't know if we're supposed to say that, but just because of my background. And of course, Dr. Knight, also a professor of communication at my alma mater, Shippensburg University. So that was another part of it. So to Nancy, to you, what were one of the things that you really took away and reflected after this?
I think Dr. Knight talked about pop culture, and she talked about we're encouraged to be nice. We're taught to be nice in a relationship versus what's happening now. There's no more campaigns. Love is respect. I mean, there's just a different approach to it in that, well, I think that's what I understood, is that we're being more open about it instead of just understanding that you got to be nice to each other in a relationship and just be okay with whatever happens in that relationship.
And I think that's particularly for women. So for me, the issue of domestic violence and how it's shown, specifically in films and TV, is it's changed over the years and gotten more, quote, more subtle. Not really, but it's trying to be a little bit more subtle and not hitting. But it's still there and it's still normalized. And that's, I think that's a huge part of it, is the silence is part of the normalization and vice versa. And that's not what's needed to end domestic violence.
So one of the things that stands out for me was her review of some of the TV shows from long ago. And the way that women were portrayed, especially, and to Nancy's point about being nice and not being assertive, and she talked about that the show I Dream of Jeannie, and I had never thought about sort of the way women were portrayed of taking orders and doing exactly what she was told and being sort of an object. Anyway, I was very impressed with her knowledge about all of those things, including TV and music, especially the music from today. I don't know anything about some of the stuff she was talking about, so it was really enlightening to listen to her.
And just to sort of wrap a bow on this, again, this hit with me because of my background, but I never stopped to think about the fact that a lot of people, especially young people, growing up, popular culture is their gateway to learning a lot about a lot of different things. I mean, if somebody never or didn't grow up in a home where they might have experienced intimate partner violence, their whole interaction with that might be through popular culture, whether it be television, movies, or even music. And so I appreciate the fact that some of the more famous people who are pop culture sort of icons are taking the initiative to step up for certain causes. Now, not always intimate partner violence, but that certainly is a cause that some pop culture icons have stood up and have, you know, taken to task. And I think that that's really awesome because our world is so nuanced and popular culture is often the window that we look through in terms of how we understand things. And so I appreciated her discussion specifically about some of these, you know, people who are influencers or popular among the young people who are stepping up and are helping to increase awareness. Of course, we've spoken about how awareness is not the end-all be-all, but it's certainly a good place to start. All right, we're moving on to our final episode, Trauma-Informed Juvenile Probation, an Evolving Approach in Breaking the Cycle for Youth. This was with the manager of strategic operations, Bill Keim, he was one of my favorite guests. Of course, we don't all have favorites, but I really appreciated meeting Bill, and his perspective was much different than anyone that we've had on the show, right, Nancy?
Yes. Again, it opened me up to understanding the juvenile delinquency and what is provided to families and children, and thus not making an assumption that if, you know, when a child is involved in a crime, they're arrested and they're just put aside, you know, and it's just nothing more, and the child repeats the behavior. So that helped me to understand the amount of support that is provided through juvenile delinquency, the entire agency itself, the commission itself, but also with the probation officers. So he talked about walking with the family, which I thought that was really interesting. The collaborative efforts, the referrals that are made to the family, so that it's not just the child, it's the family. Children are part of a family. So that stayed with me so that they can return to their homes and remain as that family.
That all what you've said is significant to me. What really got me was the idea of making mistakes, and adolescents make mistakes and adults make mistakes. And some of them are terribly egregious and lead to very difficult lives. But so many of them are typical adolescent, I'll call it foolishness or risk-taking. And when I think about my family, yeah, there were some of those. And I appreciate that in most cases, it doesn't have to last forever. It doesn't have to ruin a life. But things need to be done and said, and families worked with and juveniles worked with and supported. And when he talked about the support they give to the juveniles about how to make better choices and how to live life, just that education, I think that's important.
I think what impressed me the most about what Bill talked about was the changes that have happened through the years in the juvenile justice system and how they are truly moving to be a trauma-informed system, which was not the case many years ago. When we thought about juvenile justice a long time ago, it was a very sort of disciplinary, punitive kind of approach, which doesn't seem to be there anymore, which is very, very helpful to hear about. The fact that they do assessments when the young people come to them, they carefully review the needs, and then they absolutely reach out to families, which I was so impressed with. That wasn't always the case. And so Bill is an excellent example of how someone can move through the ranks as a juvenile probation officer and then move up and be involved now in all kinds of things that helps to improve the system.
Yeah, and one of the things that I just wanted to sort of follow back up with something that Nancy said. The thing I took away from Bill was not just so much the individual, but the family, and how the family is becoming more involved in the processes that these folks are going through. But really, this sort of tied together almost every single person, if not every single person, talked about how trauma-informed care is really one of the most important things that this industry has seen happen over the last few years. And just maybe in our final last couple of minutes here, Nancy, would you want to speak to, you know, that sort of more recent trend of trauma-informed care as opposed to maybe some historical ways of dealing with this?
Well, I'm not an expert, but just based upon being involved in these podcasts alone, I know what I heard was that on the surface, kids, you know, think, you know, they show that they're okay when there's trauma that's occurred in their life, but they're really not. And being able to talk about that trauma is that courage, that big 100%. Step that we talked about, that resiliency that they're able to identify and deal with. And I think that to me was so important. It helps to substantiate what I do through Randy's House of Angels, or what we do through Randy's House of Angels, by providing these therapeutic programs for children to be able to open up and talk about how trauma impacts them personally, because each child is different. So again, on the surface, a child can say they're okay, but deep down inside, no. And then it goes on to the parents being able to recognize that.
The trauma-informed care for me has been profound, because that's part of what I teach about. Most everyone's been traumatized, and just little things we heard in terms of Detective Owen, they get down on the child's level. And I can't imagine how traumatizing it would be to have police officers come in if your parents or caregivers are being violent. But little things, like she used the word shielding, we could shield the children when they can. And if we can minimize the traumatization in those situations. Also, Bill Keim talked about not traumatizing the kids, not coming at them. And that's just what we did in the past, but we don't need to do that anymore because we know better and we can do better. And then the other thing is, you know, recognize the past trauma, because the trauma lives in our bodies. We can't just saying we're fine. We may have been taught to say we're fine, but that doesn't mean we're fine. And so working through that in any number of ways, I give a plug to Randy's House of Angels summer camp. They spend 3 days working with these kids to help them work through the trauma and have a heck of a time as well. I mean, it's not all work. So thank you.
Both Ellen and Nancy have really said a lot about how trauma-informed care has become a part of our day-to-day now in the systems that really serve our children and families. That was not always the case, and it's really heartening to me because this is something that I've been working on for years, looking at the impact of trauma and how to really address that. So it's been great to hear that thread that has come through all of our episodes, I think, that
absolutely,
that trauma-informed care has really been present and embraced.
And I think that just goes to show, like I said earlier, about how the evolution of how this subject has changed over time to try to find better ways to address these situations in a way that's not going to cause even more grief from the individuals who were exposed to it. So, well, we are running out of time for our final episode. So I just wanted to give each of you an opportunity to, whether it's about this group of episodes or maybe just a personal reflection about these last three seasons, it's crazy. It's been going on that long. Just some personal reflection about what it's been like to be a part of this podcast, Nancy.
Three seasons, I can't believe this. It's been a brain drain for me, I'll be honest with you, because I want to do so much based upon what I've learned. And, you know, with what I do with Randy's House of Angels, I want to do more. And I just need to know where to focus the most. And I know what we're doing is really reaching out and helping a lot of children, but we can do more. So I'm so thankful to everyone that has partaked in, you know, the podcast themselves. And thank you, Ellen, and thank you, Sherry, and also Paul for your expertise and pulling this together. But thank you, everyone out there that is taking time to listen to our podcast, not just one time, but maybe the second time, and also sharing that with your family, your friends, your community, and also maybe others that you also collaborate with.
Absolutely, ditto. And open it up to everyone. Listen to more than one of the podcasts. I know that's a shameless plug, but I'm going to give it to you anyways, because I didn't know what to expect. I do know that I was sweating bullets on the first one that I hosted, and I have succumbed to not doing that every time anymore. But I've learned so much. And I think specific to that is not just information. This is, as I said before, my mind and my heart. And it's opened up questions that now I know what the questions are that I want to go answer. Whereas before, I didn't even know what the questions were. I recognized that domestic violence exists. But beyond that, I was kind of not too knowledgeable. So that's all I have.
So I've learned so much from the interviews with all of the folks that have been willing to come and talk with us about what they do and what they know. I didn't know a lot of the things that we learned during this whole time. And I especially love working with all of you, Ellen and Nancy and Paul, and Melissa Ricketts, because that's been such a big part of what we're able to do. If it weren't for Melissa, we wouldn't have met all these people that we've been able to interview and learn so much from.
When I think back, not only do I have an even greater appreciation for everybody involved with Randy's House of Angels because of how important your mission is to these people's lives. It's not just you don't want to just solve something. Of course, in the end, of course, we would love to solve these things. But what you're doing is actually giving compassion, giving a listening ear, and offering the opportunity for people to understand that there's nothing wrong with them, that it's that, you know, maybe they were involved with something that you know, ideally we could go back on and change. But it's facing it head on. It's offering this support. And again, speaking from someone who lived through this when I was younger, I can only just imagine the wonderful things that you're doing with all of the individuals who are a part of Rainy's House of Angels. But maybe more importantly, I am so proud of all of you and the growth that we as a collective group have seen. I am so proud of all of you, you know, walking into this, never having done podcasting before. I got to tell you, I am super impressed with how well things have turned out this season. And all I can say is I look forward to season 4.
I just wanted to note, Paul, this is not the end. We'd love to hear from our listeners and the suggestions of topics that they would like for us to seek professionals and individuals in the field. But to me, that's more important is that we're just not stopping here.
Yeah, let's keep it going.
And one more thing, seeking professionals, if there's someone listening to this podcast that thinks that they could help us by being on the podcast, get in touch with Rainy's House of Angels, Nancy Chavez, because my guess is that some of you could really help us go to the next level.
I love that idea, Ellen. I hadn't thought about that, but that's a great idea to get somebody to volunteer to come and be interviewed. Wonderful.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode, our final episode of season 3. But as we mentioned, it's not going to end here. You will hear from us again. It may be a little while, but we always look forward to doing this, and we certainly look forward to having some great guests in the future as well. But all I can do is just thank everyone for all of your hard work and all the behind-the-scenes things that go on. There's so much work that goes on before just hitting the record button. So, and Nancy, you're the one that drives the ship, so yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Congratulations.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. We'll look forward to seeing you again in the near future. Until then, we'll see you. Rainy's House of Angels is sponsoring season 3 of a series of podcasts that will serve as a resource to anyone impacted by domestic violence, including parents, guardians, caseworkers, health providers, advocates, teachers, trauma specialists, clinicians, and more, to provide an overview of domestic violence and how to handle situations where domestic violence is present. Season 3 will include a series of 5 podcasts that will include an overview in addressing the mental health stigma in domestic violence situations, the influence of pop culture on domestic violence, looking at the harmful tropes and changing narratives, and addressing trauma-informed juvenile probation and breaking the cycle for youth. The podcast will include testimony and stories from experts that work in the domestic violence field, criminal justice, juvenile justice, and social work academia. The podcast will be broadcasted starting in August of 2025 and run through October of 2025. Go to Randy's House of Angels website at randyshouseofangels.org. There, you can catch up on any podcast you've missed, find additional resources that support the podcasts, and we encourage you to click on the link and take our short survey. Your feedback is essential to shaping and informing future episodes of this show.